Military City USA Radio is sponsored by FCA Alamo Chapter. Stay tuned as Mark Fry of Alamo FCA and retired Air Force Colonel Kelly Crooks salute the leaders of the U.S. military's missions in San Antonio. The views of the guests and hosts are their own and not those of Salem Communications.
Hey, good morning and Merry Christmas to everyone out there in Military City.
So, Santa Claus.
Yes, sir. Colonel, this is Colonel C. C stands for Claus. We want to welcome everybody to FCA Military City USA radio show.
So we're about a week away from the big day.
Yeah, big day. You know that happens every year?
It does.
It does. And so, it's a special day every year, but the spirit, hopefully, is there from January 1st through December 31st.
So we need to mention that the show is brought to you by Alamo FCA, but we will be commercial-free. We will be playing Christmas music, as has been and will be our tradition going forward. And our guest today is Chaplain Joe Melvin, who is the chaplain for U.S. Army South. And so, good morning, Chaplain.
Good morning. It's good to be with you both.
So, but if you have friends or family who want to hear the show, how can they do it?
They can tune in and listen. Or get on the website at www.militarycityusaradio.org. And we're also on tunein.com and on the Answers website.
Hey, and we need to make sure we forward that picture to the chief of chaplain's office. So how about we'll do that at the break in case they're listening?
We will get that out there.
So good morning, Colonel. And good morning, Chaplain. So we're going to call you Chaplain. Would you like to be Chaplain Joe? How do people address you? Chaplain Joe?
Chaplain Melvin is usually
Chaplain
the way
Melvin.
They address me.
All right. So good morning, Chaplain Melvin. And where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Idaho. My father was a pastor, although my extended family is from Southern Illinois. My parents grew up, they grew up in Southern Illinois. I grew up in Idaho because of their movement up there and being in the ministry. My whole life up in Idaho, we lived in three different locations, Wilder, Wallace, and Stites, where I was born, a town of 200 on the Nez Perce Indian Reservation. So
is that close to, the Nez Perce, very famous for being involved with Yellowstone area.
Right. Chief Joseph.
Chief Joseph. Yeah. Is that how you got your name?
No, actually, it's my uncle's name. But
there you go. All right. So Chief Joseph and the Nez Perce. So for our listeners who may be geographically challenged, what part of Idaho is that?
That's on the base of the Panhandle. If you're familiar with Idaho at all, it's on the Clearwater River specifically. It's over the Lolo Pass from Montana, and so right at the base of the Panhandle in the Bitterroot Mountains.
So it doesn't sound like you grew up in large towns, but small towns.
Up until I went to college in Minot, North Dakota.
There you go.
Town of 30,000 was a huge metropolis for me.
You said your father was in ministry?
He was in ministry my whole life. I'm the youngest of 11, so he had served in World War II in the Navy, had been a coal miner for years, and then went into the pastorate at about the age of 33, which was well before I was born.
In the military, they tends to have kids from military parents end up in the military. Is that similar to the pastoral vocation?
For my family, it was true. Out of the 11 of us, four of the brothers, counting me, have been in ministry. And out of the six sisters, I believe five out of the six have been in ministry, their husbands or them as a team. And so it's been true for us. And then for me, my eldest brother went into the Navy in Vietnam and was a corpsman, worked his way up to be a CW3, and was a PA when he retired.
So you said you went to college in Minot, which is the home of an Air Force installation. How did you come to join the Army?
Well, I wanted to be an Air Force chaplain, actually, because I knew that would get me up into the Northwest. I loved. I grew up wanting to fly A-6s in the Navy because my brother and my father, and thought that would be really cool. But during my early adult years, I started feeling called to both ministry and to the military. And even though my brother and my father talked about the chaplaincy, it wasn't until I sat down and talked to my academic advisor and said, hey, I'm kind of in a quandary. I'm trying to figure out how to put these two together. And he happened to be looking into the Army National Guard chaplaincy at the time. So he asked me if I had ever considered that. And it was like bells and whistles that fit exactly where I felt like God was taking me. Fast forward a little bit, by the time I got to the seminary, they had shut down the Air Force chaplaincy program at that point, the training portion, just because they had full capacity and weren't looking to expand. It was during one of the times of downsizing, similar to what we're in now. And in light of that, then my endorser, which is my civilian boss, who basically authorizes me to be considered for the chaplaincy, and then the Army selects. We ended up talking through either going into the Navy, and I knew my brother was at sea at the time, or into the Air Force, or the Army rather, for training, and then with the intent of going back to the Air Force. However, I trained with the Army, a lot of camping involved, a lot of outdoor experience, and it fit me really well. So I just never did make the transition back.
When you were deciding that, you said you wanted to go in the military and the chaplaincy. What? How do you bring those two things together? What was it that you saw, or you saw a need for, that you said, I have a calling to go do these two things together as opposed to just one or the other?
With my father being a World War II vet, with my brother being a Vietnam vet and then staying in for 23 years, my family has always been very patriotic, and we've always looked to the military as being an important part of our government and an important part of our nation. And so it became a very natural fit to kind of look this direction in order to see, what type of, even if I started there, then what would I do? I had another brother that did 4 years in the Air Force. And so just seeing that type of model set me up to kind of think that way. And then as far as my father and mother being in ministry and a musical family, we kind of, I was looking at maybe flying A-6s and being a lay leader in the music department or something of a church. But as I said, the calling to ministry became stronger and stronger. And so putting the two together became a natural fit.
So I got my first edgy question. So Chief of Chaplaincy out there in the Army, if you're listening, let's give this man a little support here. Here's my question. Be ready. How come in every picture I see of chaplains in the military, y'all have that same very confident, calm smile that is just, do you train that? How do you all have it? It's that one right there. It's just a very natural, calm. You look at a chaplain and you go, and your shoulders just kind of go down a little bit. How do you learn that?
I would say I didn't learn it. I think I can't speak for everybody on that one, but I can say that I think for the Army chaplain, pro Deo et patria, for God and country is our motto. Yeah. And in light of that, for the Army chaplains I know, they take very seriously the call to do ministry, regardless which religion we come from, 140 plus different religions and denominations represented in the chaplain corps, and over 3,000 Army chaplains at this time across the total Army of all three compos. And each of us are doing our best to represent both God and country. And
does that just make you just so easy inside that you have that faith in both God and country, and that somebody who doesn't have faith in one or the other one just can't have that same level of, or may not have that same level of calmness and composure and just inner peace?
But I think you're in the Army, we're surrounded by great people.
Yeah.
And so that really reinforces it, and the Chaplain Corps continues to build on our identity constantly. We're here to nurture the living, care for the wounded, and honor the fallen. It's a great call.
Yeah.
And so it's, despite the fact it can be daunting at times because we want to do it very effectively, even today the challenge isn't being in front of a microphone. I tend to be an extrovert. However, the daunting aspect of this would be to do well and represent the Corps and the Army well.
Yeah. Chaplain, talk a little bit about what it's like to be deployed in the war zone as a chaplain.
I think for each of us, like any human experience, depends on what you're exposed to and what you're dealing with. But for the chaplaincy, as we're deployed and as we deal with our soldiers, we are able to kind of draw vicariously across the spectrum as we deal with our own experience, which can be challenging, as well as dealing with those that are around us. And one of the big challenges, especially this time of year, having been deployed over Christmas and New Year's myself, and in the proximity of it at another time where it looked like I was going to be gone over the Christmas period, you recognize the level of sacrifice, not just that you're making, but that you're asking your family to make.
Why do they always seem to have a deployment right before Christmas and or Thanksgiving, Christmas? Is that, you know, I know it's a low news cycle, and so maybe the politicians say, okay, I can deploy people and not have it in the news as much. But it seems like that is very hard for the chaplaincy. You know, you got to go there, and these people have just been uplifted right before the holidays, as opposed to in May or, you know, some middle of the year.
Well, I think that the deployment cycle is really, it moves on the military schedule. The politicians make the determination of when, you know, we may do the initial deployment, but once we're into the cycles, then it really becomes based on training cycles and the ability to execute the mission. And so we really do deploy throughout the year. I think it's probably the deployments that occur closest to this time of the year that can be the biggest challenge. And so, for instance, with U.S. Army South, we deploy not to the combat zone per se, but to South America. We have teams down in Guantanamo Bay, and then also down in what's called Joint Task Force Bravo in Honduras. And their cycle is dependent upon, we currently have one in Joint Task Force Bravo that normally would be cycling out probably about this time of year. But because of his predecessor extending and working through that, it shifts his cycle to the summer. And so those deployment cycles really depend on the needs of, as we say in the Army, the needs of the Army really do drive when you go somewhere and what you do.
When you deploy, do you deploy with your a unit, or do chaplains go by themselves? You know, you get used to your own operation support. Do you take some enlisted group? Do you have like a little cadre that you deploy with?
It really depends upon the overall mission and the type of unit, because there are chaplains in all three compos. For instance, when I deployed to Desert Storm, I was pastoring a church up in Devil's Lake, North Dakota, and was called up from the reserves to fill a unit going out of Indiana that didn't have a chaplain in the slot. And so I literally met my commander as he was getting on the bus to deploy. I did a couple weeks of training at Fort Ben Harrison, Indiana, and then flew out and joined my unit over in Desert Storm.
Kelly, ask your counseling question, and then we're going to go to break.
All right, counseling question. I was noticing on the website you were with some guys in Fort Bragg, some soldiers, majors, I guess, getting their master's degree in counseling. And how important is it to learn the counseling aspect in the chaplaincy when you have this inner belief system that should drive things naturally? Why do you need the counseling training?
Well, we count on what you were just talking about. We refer to, at least from my denomination background, as a call that drives that focus. But just like any other mission that you do, the Army wants to enhance our capability. The importance of the counseling is that chaplains spend, there have been times where we've studied the reports, and up to 80% of your time will be in counseling. And so becoming very effective is important. And our background in theology lends itself to pastoral counseling. But what the master's degree program does is it gives us some higher-level quality clinicians that we're able to lean on that provide from a pastoral perspective. We don't get in the behavioral health realm, but we do have skills that parallel that, and then we apply it from a pastoral perspective. And so having an expert on virtually every garrison that we can draw from for general support, then the young chaplain who may not know as much about counseling is able to refer or to go and co-counsel in order to enhance their capabilities.
It's time for our first Christmas musical interlude here on Military City USA Radio.
And we are back here on this special Christmas edition of Military City USA Radio. Before we turn it over, I do have to say one shout-out, and that's to my brother and his wonderful wife, Viv. Everybody knows my brother. I guess he's been on a few times. It's their 30th wedding anniversary this week.
There you
go. So happy anniversary. I'll see you here in about 3-4 hours.
Well, we'll give a shout-out to all of our usual listeners,
usual
my wife,
listeners.
Tony, and
all my best friends and family.
There you go.
Love you all. And, Chaplain, any shout-outs before we move on?
I would, yes, to the Chaplain Corps, and know that during this season that we're all praying for the support of our U.S. military, and then also to U.S. Army South, specifically to the Chaplain team. I work with a great team there, chaplains and assistants. And to the leadership and the soldiers of U.S. Army South.
And so, we are here with Chaplain Colonel Joseph Melvin from the Command Chaplain U.S. Army South. And Mark?
Colonel Melvin, as we discussed during the Christmas show, we typically turn the mic over to the chaplain for an opportunity to deliver a Christmas message. So over to you, Chaplain.
I appreciate the opportunity. I listened to 9:30, the answer quite often because you guys have great traffic and weather, and so this is a great honor to be here today. As we look at the Christmas season. Can't help but look specifically at the U.S. Army South. We have a security cooperation of South America, Central America, and the Caribbean, and work to be the partner of choice for our partner nations in that region. But we also have some missions, as I mentioned before, very specific Joint Task Force Bravo down in Honduras, and then also Joint Task Force Gitmo, where we provide support in the security there. And as we do that, it helps me kind of have a real touchstone from the position where I am right now in order to come in contact with folks that are deployed, even though we quite often think of deployment as downrange, meaning over in the combat zones. The separation is still just as real. And so I kind of was contemplating, as Mark and I talked on the phone earlier, about the families who are away from their soldiers at this time, and kind of thinking through the message that might be worth sharing today. There's so many great messages that come during this time of the season. And what I was thinking about, of course, we're all familiar with, if you've ever watched the Charlie Brown Christmas special, the Luke passage, and so tremendously done by Linus, and would offer that as a great reach in Luke chapter 2, where it speaks of the birth of Christ. But there are a couple other passages of Scripture that came to mind that I think if I were standing in front of a group of family members today, I would probably share out of Philippians chapter 2, verse 5, and it says, your attitude should be the same as Christ, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, and being found in the likeness of man, being found in that fashion, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even death on the cross. Therefore God exalted him to the highest place and gave him a name which is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow in heaven, on earth, and under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. And whenever I look at that passage of Scripture and I think about the Luke passage about what this whole season is, I'm reminded of a story, and apologies to Paul Harvey, because I'm confident I will not tell the story as well as he did. But if you've if you're like me, grew up listening to radio more than TV, and I'm sure you've heard the story. If you have not, then it's well worth Googling or looking up on YouTube and being able to hear the Paul Harvey version, which, as I said, much better. He shares a story of a man who, not a hypocrite, not a horrible man, but just a man who had struggled his entire life with the idea of God becoming man. Why would God do that? And why would he reach down to us in such a fashion? And one Christmas Eve, as the snow began to fall, his family was headed to church, and he said, I'm not going this year because it's not suitable for me, and I'm tired of playing that role. It makes me feel like a hypocrite, so I'm going to stay home. As the evening went on, he heard a thump against the back glass, and then another and another, and after a minute, he went and looked out through the back patio window, and he saw that the storm had increased considerably, and birds had been hitting the back glass, trying to get in and out of the cold weather. And in that attempt, they were running into the glass. I think we've all probably seen that at some point or another. And he went and put on his galoshes and his overboots, for those who don't know what galoshes are anymore, and went out into the storm. And he thought about it for a minute and was, how can I help these birds out? Because the collection continued to grow. And he thought about the little barn where his children stabled their pony, and he decided that perhaps if he could herd them in there, they'd be better off. So he opened the door, turned the light on, and began trying to herd the birds in that way. If you've ever tried to herd birds, it doesn't work very well. They go every which way. And the more he attempted to move them in the direction of safety, the more they began to become hysterical and flutter about and it seemed to move farther away from even the safety of his home and the wall the safety that the wall provided. As he turned on the light, added the idea of maybe food, so he scattered breadcrumbs, leading them to the door or attempting to lead them to the door. And again, every motion he made seemed to scare the birds more. And in frustration, he was thinking to himself, how can it be that I'm trying to help these birds, and yet in my very best attempt to help them, they seem to become afraid of me and to move away from me rather than towards me. And so he thought of various ways of trying to move them. None of them seemed to work in any effective fashion. And finally, in his frustration, he said, you know, I wish I could communicate with them. But he realized that the only way he could really communicate with them would be to become one of them. And if he were a bird and were able to communicate with them, then he could tell them how to find safety. And at that moment, the bells of the church began to peal out a Christmas song, and he sunk to his knees in the snow, realizing for the first time why God would become man, not to impose his will upon us, but so that we can understand that he really does care about our safety, and he does care about us. That's roughly how the Paul Harvey story goes. And again, my apologies to Paul Harvey and anybody who's heard the story done by him so much more effectively. But I would just offer to you that that story is an encouragement to the family members. Know that you're not alone. Know that God is with you and that he really does care for you. The purpose of Christ coming to us in human form is not imposition and is not an attempt to trick us into following him and to following God, but it literally is for the purpose of drawing us closer to him. As I speak this, I'm speaking from my tradition, and as you asked earlier, Kelly, about how do we keep a confident smile, it's for me, knowing that that's the foundation of my ministry and of my soldiering. I've been a soldier for 27 years now, and following Christ for me has been the foundation of being able to be effective, or as effective as I can be in my limitations in ministry, and reaching out to those that are around me. And that's what I would offer to those that are living right now during this season, and your family member is deployed, whether it's, as I said before, in our region down in South America or Central America or the Caribbean, or if your family members are deployed, into the region that we quite often think of the world, in Southwest Asia, know that God is big enough to not only be with us here, but he's also with your loved one. He cares about you. The purpose of his incarnation, the Advent season, is to come and to spend time with us so that he can speak in our language and he can communicate with us through his word. John 1:1 talks about God becoming word, and he really starts with, in the beginning, God was the word, and the word was with God, and he's speaking of Christ there. And it's the same language that begins Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created. And that's not accidental that John would use that language, but was an attempt to tie together that God really has been present throughout all of history. And yet, at this time of the season, we're reminded that he came in a very special way in Jesus Christ, and that ministry is provided to us so that we can live in him and know of him. And that offers us the opportunity to draw closer to him. So that's the message that I have for the season, for those that are our family members alone. You're not alone. Christ is with you. The challenge of the winter, the challenge of what's going on around you, really is something that he can offer comfort and hope. Just like the man who was attempting to help the birds, his communication with us through his word is there to draw us closer to him and provide comfort and to provide care. And he does that not only in the abstract, as some people say, but with skin on, those that are around us that care and that are willing to reach out and to provide comfort to us. So I would encourage you to draw strength from your community of faith. The one of the principles of the chaplaincy, one of the key principles, is to support the commander in the free exercise of religion. And so I would offer it to you, if you have a historic faith that you draw from, a family faith, then I would encourage you to look there during the time that your family members are deployed, and to draw strength from that source, to know that there's something that lives beyond us and he cares for us in our living and in the challenges that we face in life. And so I would provide that to you as a source of comfort and strength. And I know you're going to hear the Linus story, or at least have the potential of that, and the various other references during the Advent season. But again, I would offer to you Philippians chapter 2, 5 through 11, as it speaks of Christ coming and making the choice, like the man who went out and desired to be able to communicate with the birds. God literally came and became man in order to provide for us and to be able to build a bridge between us and God. And I would encourage you to find comfort there and know that the Christ in the manger is literally the Christ who is God and has that ability.
Al, let's take our second musical interlude here on this special Christmas edition of Military City USA Radio. I'm Mark Fry of Alamo FC and the Azimuth Corporation. My co-host is Air Force retired Colonel Kelly Crooks. Stay tuned for another message from our special guest, Chaplain Joe Melvin. And don't touch that web browser or your radio dial. We'll be right back.
And a happy holiday to everyone out there. You are listening to the FCA Military City USA radio show here on 9:30 a.m. The Answer, sponsored by FCA Alamo Chapter. And we celebrate all things military here in Military City USA. We are here with Chaplain Melvin from U.S. Army South. And Chaplain, you mentioned a couple of things there that before we go to your second message, I wanted to ask you about. First is you mentioned the difference between Army South going to South America and kind of watching over Guantanamo Bay. Some of the folks who deploy down there, their families here, they don't have that same level of fear of, you know, death and all that as they deploy down there. But it is not a totally safe area. And so there are special things that they have to do down there to make sure that our country is safe from drugs, from the impact of terrorism that is coming up from the south. Guantanamo Bay, obviously, is that influence of the prisoners there and the political pressure that they fall under. When those folks come back, the ministry... what are some of the challenges you have in South Army South versus, let's say, an Iraq or Afghanistan issues?
Well, I would say for the soldiers who are dealing with the confinement facility down in Guantanamo Bay and the detainees, whenever they go down there, they're deploying, but they're deploying with their families. And having been down there recently, it's relatively small. Area that they are confined to, meaning the soldiers and their families, and so the challenges of being separated and yet on a full-time cycle as if being deployed can be very extreme. So the ministry, you asked earlier if we deploy with our units, and in that situation, many of those units that go down there are National Guard or Reserve. And so they end up deploying together, even the active component soldiers that go down and service members, it's more appropriate for me to say, in both those settings, the active component typically will deploy with the unit that they at least have trained up with. And so then being able to provide ministry whenever you return from any deployment, that's one of the great things about the way the military chaplaincy works, is you're there to ensure the free practice of religion. And at the same time, to be able to work in a pluralistic environment. So we use, in the Army, provide and advise as two of our key terms. We provide even if it's performing. So I'm endorsed and ordained by a specific denomination. And whenever I, for instance, share a message, as you have invited me today, then there's a freedom to share that message from my theological perspective and my church's theological perspective, because that's a way of keeping very intentional away from the establishment of a church, which is something that we hear about all the time in the news. Quite often there's a kind of a rebuttal against the chaplaincy because, you know, you're trying to establish religion. No, we're there to keep from establishing religion because I represent specific denominations, as I said before, 140-plus of us in the military, as far as diversity goes, the different denominations of religions. And so we come from that perspective and represent that perspective in order to allow the soldiers around us to be able to practice from their perspective. So if I'm dealing with a soldier who's not from my denomination, then the way I provide is by bringing in, for instance, I'm not a Catholic priest, so I bring in a Catholic priest to provide mass for my soldiers and for their families in the situations like Guantanamo. And then in the adverse of that, or the reverse of that, is whenever I return and I'm dealing with my soldiers, or even while I'm deployed and I'm dealing with my soldiers, I deal with them from their perspective, not that I attempt to imitate being their chaplain or, say, in their pastor from their denomination, but I engage them from where they're at and allow them to be able to practice their religion, encourage the commander, and ensure the support of their denominational needs or their religious needs in that. So the same thing whenever we come back. It's just, as I said at the end of the last portion, the encouragement is always, if you have a religion that you've been practicing from childhood, there's a resource there and support there. But at the same time, when I share from my experience in my denomination.
So, Chaplain, you told me in preparation for the show that you would also have a message for those who are deployed.
What I would offer to those that are deployed, and it really kind of transitions, hopefully, if you were able to hear the last section. I was talking about Advent and was looking at that perspective of Christ becoming man. And if I were deployed, I was kind of thinking through that and saying, okay, what would be the message I would share? I think what I would start with is kind of the concept of Advent, and that's what we think of the Advent season in the Christian walk and in the Church of God, my denomination. We think of Advent of Christ coming, and the second Advent, many of us believe that Christ will return again. And in this season, we focus very strongly on the coming of Christ as a child. And yet, the impact of that is really a huge transition from an old covenant to a new covenant, and being able to stand with Christ as I was saying, the bridge between God and man, the ability to be able to, not in my goodness or anything that I can do, but in Christ's righteousness and in his grace, being able to stand because of his sacrifice, righteous or right before God, and being able to be in relationship with God, which is impossible for us in the absence of the God-man Christ, and again, from my theological perspective. So I would share that's something that we face quite often in life, is a similarity to the Advent and the way we approach things like deployment. We can draw from the Advent season as we look at Mary and Joseph moving during the time of pregnancy, a time of great expectation. And deployment is a time of great expectation, because we deploy expecting to get home to our loved ones, and expecting, so we look forward to that. So it's almost, for deployment, if we're not careful, the expectation seems to always be backwards rather than forward. And so I would encourage my deployed service members and the DA civilians and those that are in support that are deployed to really think from the Advent perspective. As Mary and Joseph went to pay the taxes, they're moving to the Bethlehem city, and the expectation is forward, looking forward to meeting this requirement and to be able to do all that's necessary. And yet at the same time, you know, the excitement of coming of Jesus and the birth, just like any of us who have ever, I have three wonderful daughters, Rebecca, Jolinda, and Melinda, marvelous young ladies now. In fact, my first daughter was born while I was deployed, my third daughter, I know which one's which. The third daughter was born while I was deployed to Desert Storm. She was 4.5 months old the first time I met her. And I got to pause there and breathe for a second. That was a time of great expectation, knowing that my wife was very far along in the pregnancy when I was gone, and looking forward to meeting my daughter and to be able to spend time with her, and to bond with her and to learn, you know, who she was. So as I looked forward to that, it gave me an opportunity to kind of think through the Advent from that perspective, the looking forward to Jesus coming. And yet again, our soldiers, and I've experienced this before because I've spent years away from my family, sometimes days at a time, sometimes weeks at a time, months at a time, years at a time, you end up with various times that you're away from family for different reasons. And the difficult times were when I would be gone and look so far forward that I was really looking back and thinking through all that I was missing, thinking through, and I became unfocused, if you will, on what I was really, the experience of life, where I was. And as I said, knowing that Christ was with me would help me bring me back to center and be able to say, hey, it's okay. This is where I'm living. My family is in his care. And to being able to allow life's experience that I'm in right now to be okay. It's okay to be separated. It's okay to be in hazardous situations or dangerous situations, since that's what I've signed up to do, and that's where the Army has moved me. I trust God's involved, and God's bigger than the Army or the government for that. And so I tend to trust there, and would encourage my service members and those that are deployed to kind of look from that perspective and be able to say, okay, since I'm here, how do I represent God, and what does the Advent speak to me? Again, if we're not careful, when we're in deployment, we look back and we say, wow, you know, if only I could be in my family's arms and be with them during this season, or they could be in my arms during this season. And it's almost like building a parenthesis that says, if only I were outside this parenthesis, looking back, it would be okay. But I would offer to you that being where you're at is okay. And to be able to provide for our nation is a great honor. The Advent, in the same way, looking forward with the excitement and the expectation becomes great. If we're not careful, the other side of the parentheses can catch us as well. If only I can get this over with. If only I can get where I'm going. But there's an excitement that energizes us, and that's looking forward to the Advent, looking forward to the coming of the Christ child. But if we become so focused on that, we miss the season, and we miss the opportunities of celebration before the big celebration of Christmas and the gift-giving, and our whole society kind of sets us up, if we're not careful, starting back, seems like May or June now, we see Christmas pop up at the local store. And in the same way, you know, we start, okay, it's all about the gifts, and it's all about that day versus the celebration of all that went on leading up to the coming of Christ and then the transition that he brought with him. That is a great parallel. One of the chaplains, Chaplain Sedgwick, that I work with, used to be in the Coast Guard years ago, and many of our chaplains have prior service, and they bring such and chaplain assistants. We have the chaplain assistant corps just celebrated the 106th, or will celebrate, rather, 28th December, their 106th anniversary. They are the enlisted side of our corps, a great group of folks who provide us tremendous support in ministry in their own right. They are not ordained clergy, and yet they are great peer counselors, and they're great people to turn to. And during your time of deployment, or for the family members, know that the chaplains, the chaplain assistants, as we call them in the Army, are there to provide care and support for you. And even as we celebrate the anniversary of the Chaplain Assistant Corps, we look forward to that here, you know, in a couple days. And yet the celebration is really thinking through not just that opportunity, but all that builds up to that, and all that the chaplain assistants do on a daily basis to provide care. So, but back to Chaplain Sedgwick's story, as he was a Coast Guard years ago, a Coast Guardman, and he was sharing with me the other day about going through the Suez Canal on one of his deployments, and he talked about the story of the Exodus, which found in the book of Exodus, go figure, in chapter 15. And as you look around that chapter building up to there and post there, you kind of see a transition that the Israelites went through. And he said, as you go through the Suez Canal, you look on one side and Egypt is lush and beautiful. You look on the other side and it's wilderness. And he said, just literally desert and desolation. And so you could see why once the children of Israel crossed over and were going where God had led them, living the history that he had provided them, it would be easy to out in the middle of the wilderness or even on the edge of the wilderness look back at Egypt and go, okay, being a slave wasn't so bad after all, you know. And, you know, the leeks and the garlics, which is not great vegetables nor good food to live on, but it sounded better than the sand and all that laid in front of them. But God provided for them in that time, and through the manna and through the quail and through his leadership and his guidance, they were able to make it through the wilderness. Yea, 40 years later, before they get to the promised land because of their decision-making, back to the bird story, being able to trust God to help us make decisions, not because of his decision to make our lives miserable, but because he's leading us somewhere, and if we follow him, we get there. And that's the way the Advent season is. That's the way deployment is. If we live where we're at and we go through, God is with us, provides for us, gives us strength and encouragement along the way. And in the end, we all look forward to the great promised land. But even the promise of coming back to our families is there. Caution I'd give you if you're at the end of the deployment is whenever you come back, if you're not careful, suddenly there's a new parenthesis. If only I were back in deployment, life was simpler. I used to say that whenever I was deployed, I loved that ministry because it's very deep, and it's an inch wide and a mile deep, as my dad used to say. And so a lot of depth to it and a lot of focus, and then you redeploy, and life is a mile wide and an inch deep because you're dealing with so many different issues. You never get the opportunity to focus and put depth into what you're doing, it seems. And so I would caution you, if you're redeploying, that feeling sometimes can be back to the parentheses. You know, if only I were back in deployment, life was simpler. There was more depth. Or if only my husband or wife was back deployed, life was simpler because I managed the family. I had controls. And so that's what I would offer to you. During the Advent season, there's change. And yet in Christ, that change is salvation. And there's eternal life and their support there. And that represents so many of the transitions in our life, that we go through change, and it seems like where we were was simpler, and yet the depth of what we're doing and where God is leading us is eternal. And so that's a strength that we can draw from our families, from the chaplain corps, both the chaplain and the assistant, and that includes in the Army South region, knowing that God is with you. And as I said before, not in the abstract, but with skin on. And I would offer to you that the unit ministry team in the United States Army, as we dub the chaplains and assistants when they work together in a unit, the unit ministry team is there to represent God in the flesh to you, and to be able to provide ministry to you during the difficult times, whether either side of deployment, during the deployment, whether you're the one deployed or you're the one waiting, know that you're not alone, that God is with you, and that we want to be there with you as well.
Wow. Two things I learned there, mostly. Jesus was born during a deployment. I love that. I'm just going to use that. So all you guys out there deployed, you know that good things happen sometimes during deployment. And the three wise men, I hope they enjoyed their ride, right? Looking forward to the visit, but hopefully they rode and they got to know each other and enjoyed the journey to Jerusalem.
Bethlehem.
Bethlehem, I'm sorry. It just, you know.
Sorry, I have to correct
you.
I
know, please do.
Yeah.
I don't know why I threw out the other one. Basic question about the chaplaincy and what's going on in the world today, and how do you resolve that and through the ministry? Is it seems like there's a war, with religions now being the underlying current, and then a war against religion, in the U.S. government. It seems like with schools and everybody always seem to battle back and forth, that during this time of year always comes to the forefront. How does the ministry resolve those things, or help the folks kind of deal with them in their minds as they try and celebrate this country, this time of year?
We, in the Chaplain Corps, have great protections. In the military, have great protections in order to be able to, not only the soldier to be able to, the freedom of religion, but also chaplains have freedom of religion. And so, again, we advise the commander in order to help them, because there are a lot of times that a soldier will come forward. Our Title 10, our legal mission, is focused on our service members. And so even though there may seem to be a lot of wars that are based on religion, our focus is on, as we well know in the United States, there are so many different religions and so many different practices of religion, and helping to be able to advise the commander on how to support his or her soldiers or service members and their families. And then the same is true for us, because of that, we're able to practice from our denominational religious standpoint, again, keeping together in our provision that we provide from our perspective by performing, or we provide by bringing in other chaplains in order to give ministry to those that we cannot.
Excellent. Thank you. It is time to come to Parade Rest on this week's edition of FCA Military City USA Radio. It's a special Christmas edition. And with us, we had Colonel Chaplain Melvin and from U.S. Army South. And, sir, we really appreciate your service, your ministry to our folks, and everything you and your folks do for us. We'd like to say Merry Christmas to everyone. Have a great New Year. We'll see you then next week.
Merry Christmas, and we'll be back next week with another edition of Alamo AFCEA Military City USA Radio.